You're listening to the Kennel Confidential Podcast, brought to you by the United Tree and Forest Association. I'm your host, Davin Ramage.
I'm your co-host, Chad Wagner.
Let's get into the episode. Hello, it is time for episode number 6 of the Kennel Confidential Podcast, and we are going to do a combo episode here about show dogs. We've got a couple of guests that we're going to talk to that have plenty of experience on the world winning level with the UKC and maybe even more. We'll find out as we talk to them. So, of course, we've already got Chad here on the phone. How are you, Chad?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing pretty good. And we are going to start out with Miss Melissa Nash, who is the most recent UKC World Bench Show winner. So, Melissa, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right.
How's Miss Melissa tonight?
Oh, not doing too bad. Listening to the katydids out here chirping, it's starting to feel like fall.
I went outside a minute ago just to get some stuff out of the truck, and I was enjoying it. Leaves are starting to change here.
I'm ready for it. Yeah, it's starting to change here, too. I'm ready for the leaves to start coming down.
Yeah, I hope it comes on fast.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we jump in too deep into the dogs, we always like to figure out and know a little bit about who we're talking to. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're from and things you're doing whenever you're not showing dogs or hunting dogs?
Yeah, so I'm from Grantsville, Maryland. It's a little town in the very far western part of Maryland. We're kind of sandwiched right in between Pennsylvania and West Virginia. So if anybody knows where Morgantown, West Virginia is at, WVU just beat Pitt over the weekend, so I'm really happy about that. We're not about 45 minutes from Morgantown. Pretty mountainous terrain. It's actually not too far off from Kentucky, the part of Maryland that we're in. It's similar type of country. You've got a lot of oak hickory forests and a lot of hills.
I did notice that your WVU fandom. I noticed that on Facebook. I actually thought you were from Virginia because I've noticed so much of it.
No, yeah, we're kind of, like I said, we're kind of sandwiched right here in between Pennsylvania and West Virginia, and but I went to the WVU for college, so.
Okay, very cool. What'd you go to college for?
Forestry.
It just fits right in then.
Yeah, so that's, you're asking about what I do when I'm not hunting, and I'm a forester for the state of Maryland for the Forest Service, so I spend a lot of time in the woods hunting or not.
Yeah, and you probably come across good chunks of timber that way too, I guess, right?
I do. I've found some good hunting spots through work.
Very cool.
I just got to say, go Big Blue.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Chad on that one. I don't have anything against WVU, though. I actually was a Virginia Tech fan, like a secondary fan. I would pull for them if they were playing Louisville or something like that because I'd just not a Louisville.
Oh, okay.
I wonder how many people we're alienating right now just by picking sports teams. We might have to stop.
Probably a lot. That's all right.
All right. Well, let's jump into it, Chad.
So, Melissa, how long have you been breeding and raising these feist dogs?
Well, the feists are a fairly recent addition, I guess you'd call it. We just got into them, my husband and I, in 2018, we got our first feist. So, just started into it then. Have only been breeding for about a year and a half now. We just raised our first litter last year. We've got a litter now that's 6 weeks old. But before that, we've been into dogs since about 2013. We started off with coonhounds. The reason we got into that, we got married in 2012, and we went on a hog hunt in Georgia for our honeymoon. And it was a hunt with dogs, and we just fell in love with dogs that hunt game. So we decided that's something we wanted to get into, and we started looking around and got into coonhounds just a few months later. But as far as showing animals and everything, I grew up in 4-H. I started off with rabbits, actually. I had fancy rabbits like Holland Lops and English Spots and some of the real fancy breeds, but I also had meat rabbits. Did a lot of judging contests and competitions with those, and then later on, as I got older and into high school, I got into sheep and goats. So showing animals isn't anything new for me, but the feists are a little bit more recent.
Okay, now do you raise mountain feist or tree and feist?
We've got mountain feist.
And so you and your husband do about everything together on the dogs, it sounds like.
Yeah. We travel to all the events together. We pleasure hunt together. We're pretty much in it together. He doesn't do the show stuff as much. And even really the competition hunt, and he's more of the pleasure hunter. So the competition ends a little bit more my thing.
Well, we just talked to somebody that is going to be on another episode, and y'all sound quite a bit alike. Joni Moore, we have spoken to her, and that's kind of how her and her husband are. They're in it together, but she does more of the competition stuff, and she just lets Jeff come along with her.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that one then.
So you pleasure hunt and competition hunt.
Yes.
Do you like both about the same, or do you like one over the other?
I mean, there's different things I like about both. The pleasure hunting, it's a little bit more laid back, and I can kind of do my own thing. The competition hunting, it can be a little stressful, you know, especially if you get into a situation where your dog's not wanting to do what you want it to do. And of course, you know, in a pleasure hunting situation, you can work with your dog. You can correct some of the things that you'd like to see done a little bit better. Can't necessarily do that in a competition hunt situation. So, I don't know. I like a good balance of both.
Are we going to be able to get you down here to Western Kentucky to hunt this year?
I've been down there for a couple. We actually last fall, the week after Thanksgiving, we went to Land Between the Lakes for a few days.
You should have called me. I could have come hunting with you.
Yeah, that's right in our backyard.
that's where we go. That's what I understand. Yeah. So we've been down that way a little bit. We go to some of the competition hunts in Eastern Kentucky. Really, a lot of them were 3-4-5 hour drives for us until we started having a couple UKC squirrel hunts at one of our local coon clubs. So I mean, that's our biggest challenge, is we're having to drive so far for a lot of the events.
Right.
So if you've been down to LBO, then, and if you listen to the recent episode with Donnie Goodman, I kind of joked that, you know, he was kind of in mountainous terrain, and we're in what this West Kentucky boy considers a hill. So if you've been to LBL and you hunt your part of the country, is LBL even close?
It's somewhat comparable. There's a big piece of state ground not too far from us, Green Ridge State Forest. I actually used to work there. It's real similar to LBL. It's, you know, like 50,000 acres. There's a lot of dirt roads through it. It's oak hickory forest. There's, you know, some old fields, and they do timber harvesting and management and everything there too. So it's a good mixture of different habitat types, but definitely with the oaks and hickories, it's pretty good squirrel hunting usually.
So what is it that got you into showing dogs then? Well, I guess it's your background with the 4-H, but maybe a better question to fine tune it. If you said you got your first feist in 2018.
Yes.
What made you choose the mountain feist?
So one of the local clubs that we belong to just across the Pennsylvania line, like I said, we're kind of sandwiched there in between. You know, I'm only like 3 miles from Pennsylvania when I'm at my house. So, you know, one of our local clubs we belong to there, they started having some World Tree Dog Association hunts, which is, you know, another registry that they do squirrel and coon hunts. And we went and spectated a little bit with that. And WTDA is different than UKC in that they have all breeds together. So whether you have a hound, a cur, a feist, a leica, everybody draws out together to hunt. So, you know, we were able to see some different types of dogs hunt and kind of how they work. I like that the feist used their eyes and ears instead of just a nose. I like that they tended to hunt a little bit closer. You know, already having hounds, I didn't really, you know, sometimes I'm walking, you know, 600, 700, 800, 900 yards to a tree with my hounds. I just didn't want to go that far with a squirrel. A lot of our forests around here, we've got a lot of den trees. So, you know, chances are that squirrel's gone in a den or timbered out or something before you get there if you have to go that far. So I wanted something that, you know, would hunt a little bit closer, would hunt along with me a little bit more. So that's kind of why we went with the Fice.
That sounds a whole lot like the research and the reconciliation that I came to.
Yeah.
I was the same way a little bit. Mainly just wanted one to hunt along with me and a little closer, like you said. That is a characteristic that I like about them.
And then, too, they're a little bit smaller dog. We keep ours. We have all of our dogs house broke. They can all be in the house. We've got six adult dogs between Fice and Hound, so we don't have them all in the house. But but we kind of generally tend to at least have one of the Fice in the house all the time. And they make good companion dogs. They're not as big as a Hound. I don't know. They make good truck riding buddies. They ride on the center console of our truck and kind of scam for squirrels as we're driving around. So just their whole personality, we just really fell in love with.
They don't take up near as much bed or slobber near as much water in the floor either, though, do they?
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
When, at what age, what point can you spot that's the dog I'm going to bench train?
Is there particular traits? Honest, not necessarily. I start working with them from a young age. We've got, like I said, we've got three Fice right now, Joker, Dixie, and Cider. Joker, we got him. He was probably, I think he was about 3 months old when we got him. We got him from Johnny Jude in West Virginia. You know, we didn't really have any specific plans for him. He was our first Fice that we got. You know, he's five now. But I already, you know, I'd been showing the hounds for a few years, so I started working with him on the bench. He's a funny little guy. He loves it. That's like his favorite thing to do. All I got to do is say bench, and he hops right up there. Yeah, I don't know. It's just something that I like to work with him on that. It's good practice anyway, even if you're not planning on showing a dog. You can teach them to mind you a lot better. You can teach them a lot more manners. Walking on a show lead, working with that dog on leading well. I use, I make paracord braided show leads is what I like to use. You know, some people might like to use a snake chain or like a single strand thin paracord lead. But using a choker type lead like that, it really teaches them a lot of manners walking on a leash. And that's helpful whether you're planning on showing the dog or not. But just, you know, working with them on the ground, working with them on their movement, working with them on standing on the bench, and then just, you know, over time you get to know your dog, you get to know its strengths and weaknesses. And you know, we went out to that world show this year. I never expected to win or anything. I mean, I knew I had a decent dog, but that was definitely the biggest Fice event I ever had been to, and I just, you know, had no idea that was going to happen, but definitely an exciting thing.
Turns out you had a good dog, huh?
Yeah, turns out I had a good dog. I mean, he had already made Grand Show Champion, and he had won a couple state shows at that point, but I mean, you guys know as well as I do that a lot of these Fice events, they're not huge events. I think we had, what did they say? We had maybe somewhere between 15 and 20 dogs at the World Show this year. I think it was somewhere around in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and some of the like you said, your local hunts or your club hunts, I can see what you mean. It would be hard to, just off such a small sample size, it would be hard to know how you're going to compete at the...
It's kind of hard to see how you measure up. I mean, I know, you know, structurally what I'm looking for in a dog. I want a dog that's well balanced, that has, you know, good gait. It's going to be a smooth mover with a nice strong top line. A judge from one of the WTDA events that I showed at one time, I really respect her. She does a lot with a lot of different breeds, and she said, you know, that dog floats. And that's kind of what you want. You want a dog that's going to move easily, and that's a dog that's going to hold up in the woods a lot better too. If they're, you know, kind of clunky or stiff in their movement, they're not going to be able to go out and hunt all day long. So, you know, just looking for some of those kind of things as, you know, a dog grows and matures. And some of those traits, like, you know, muscling or, you know, a lot of dogs don't fill out until they get a year or a little bit older. So some of those things, it's hard to tell from a young age how they're going to finish out, but structurally with the angulation, you want to have good balance between their front end and their back end. That kind of stuff you can see a little bit earlier. So that's, you know, kind of what I'm looking for structurally.
Well, you mentioned your lead techniques as far as training goes. Do you have any kind of go-to method on working? Are you willing to share your go-to method on working with, as far as once they're on the bench, is their balance and getting them to, you know, hold position, hands free, tail up, tail down, head up, head down?
Yeah, repetition. I keep a show bench in my basement. So especially when, you know, dogs that I have in the house, if I'm really getting them ready for a show or just starting to train them, I'll work with them every evening, even if it's just for a couple minutes. You know, you don't want to wear them out on it, especially if they're new to it. You want to keep it fun for them. I'll usually do it like right before feeding time, or I'll use treats as a reward when they're done. You know, as far as kind of getting them used to that, when I first started training Joker, it was like trying to bench a jumping bean. he would not stand still. He just wanted to kind of bounce all over the place. But just that repetition of getting used to the bench. You know, a lot of dogs, that carpet is kind of a different feel on their feet. They're not used to that. You know, you're trying to hold their head and trying to get them to let you position their feet where you want it. And it takes a lot of repetition, a lot of time. In a lot of cases, you know, people that have done benches for a long time, and some of the tips I've picked up over the years just from starting with the hounds, the dog follows the head. So if you can get that dog to hold his head still, get a good control on his head, then usually they'll start letting you place their feet. You know, you can kind of pinch up under their brisket a little bit. That'll get them to stand up on their toes a little bit more. It'll get them to keep their top line nice and level instead of having, you know, you don't want it to have a sag in it or anything like that. So those are just some of the tricks that I've learned over the last several years.
You know, one thing that you had brought up, Melissa, that in the shows that I was not accustomed to, we didn't do before UKC, was gating a dog. I'm not sure that a lot of the Feist judges put as much emphasis on that as they do on the bench. But to me, that is watching a dog move, I think, is a big part of it. I think that goes a long way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got my bench show judge license for Hounds, Cur, and Feist in both UKC and WTDA. And so I've been doing that for about 10 years now, judging, you know, at least that judging the hounds for 10 years. And I can tell a lot more about that dog on the ground than I can on the bench. You can, you know, there's little things that you can do on the bench. You can reposition feet. You can reposition the dog's head. You can sometimes hide faults on the bench when the dog's standing. But it's really hard to hide those faults when the dog's moving. Yeah, you know, it's moving. You know, that gait is what they naturally do when they move, and you don't want it to be something that's, you know, super slow. You don't want it to be something that's really fast. You kind of need to find what's a natural pace for your dog. You can see so much more about how that dog moves when they're on the ground and how that dog is structured and put together. And, you know, ultimately how that dog would function in the woods. And the other thing that I see a lot, you know, people think, oh, well, you know, this dog stood still the best, but that doesn't necessarily mean it should win that bench show. It's not a statue contest of how still the dog is. It's a conformational thing. It's, you know, you want the dog with the best conformation, the best structure, not necessarily the one that behaves the best. But of course, it's a lot easier for the judge to evaluate your dog if you're able to showcase by training ahead of time, by working on developing that behavior. And just, you know, practicing that kind of stuff in a variety of situations. We went to UKC's Automokes event this year, which we've gone for the last several years. It's a big coonhound event. I forget how many entries. It was over 500 entries on the biggest night that they had. So, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hounds, hundreds of people. we took Cider out with us this year just to hang out. She's a year old female we've got, and I walked her around with me all day long. She'd walk around with me. I had her on a show lead. She'd stand and watch. We had her in the show building while some of the shows were going on, and she was just standing there hanging out. She was comfortable on that lead. She was comfortable around strange people. And that's another thing that a lot of people don't think about when they go to show a dog, is if that dog only ever sees you and is only ever touched by you, they're not gonna, you know, they might be a little bit afraid or, you know, shy at a show, and they're not going to perform their best. So if you can put that dog in some uncomfortable situations, a judge is going to walk up and touch your dog, because they're going to want to feel the angulation in the front end and the rear end. They're going to want to feel that bone structure. They're going to want to feel that muscling. So, you know, if you can set your dog up, you know, take it to, you know, Rural King or Tractor Supply, and, you know, let other people pet your dog, let other people touch your dog, you know, set it up on a park bench where there's a bunch of kids playing around in the background. Any kind of distractions are good when you're trying to train a dog to compete in shows.
So you won the UKC World Hunt this past year with Joker.
The World Show.
And, you said you had a couple of state titles. What other titles do you have on Joker?
Yeah, so Joker, his show career kind of started in 2019, when he was about a year old. We took him to Mountain Feist Days. That was the first UKC Squirrel Dog event we had ever been to, was Mountain Feist Days that year, and he won Best Male Show. I've shown him at WTDA Grand Nationals the following year in 2020. He won Best Male. Then 2022, you know, he was a little bit more mature. He really started picking up. We started taking him to a lot more events. He won the overall show at Mountain Feist Days. He won the Virginia State Show. He won the Ohio State Show. And then this year in 2023, he won the Virginia State Show again. So he's gotten that one back to back. And then he was the World Show Champion this year.
How many shows do you think you've had him in, roughly?
Oh, man. Not a whole lot more than that. Let's see. So he had to have, I think it did take him 4 shows to make show champion. And then 5 after that to make grand, and I've shown him a couple times since he's made grand, so maybe a dozen.
Now, so he's done a lot in a small career.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of those, like I said, I mean, we're driving the Virginia State, that's a 4-hour drive. Ohio State's about 3.5. Mountain Feist Days, depending on the location, is anywhere from like 4 to 6 hours typically for us. So we're putting in a lot of miles to get to those shows.
And it looks like Joker not only is a good looking rascal, but he can also bark, apparently. Recent WTDA St. Jude Tree Contest Reserve Champion.
Yeah. That was just this past Saturday. WTDA, they do a benefit hunt every year for St. Jude. They do a squirrel hunt in the morning, then they do a bench show and a train contest, and that's held in Laurel Highlands, Pennsylvania, about an hour from us, so that one's fairly close for us. But yeah, their train contest, they use a coon, so yeah, I don't remember offhand, I think he had 63 barks. They do it for a minute, so he had 63 barks on a coon, which he doesn't see a whole lot of coon, but he has treed a few for us.
How close was he to being the champion there?
Oh, there was a cur dog that was really hammering him out that ended up being the champion. I think the cur dog was over 100 barks.
Yeah, I know some of those treeing contests, they count barks and some of them count misses. And
okay.
For a lot of people out there that don't know about the misses, basically if a dog is in time with itself, if it stutters and then goes back, well, that's one miss. And the dog with the least amount of misses.
Okay.
So you could have a dog that's chop mouth and just tat, 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 tat. Well, that's one miss.
Okay.
You know, whatever cadence they get in, if they got out of rhythm, basically is a miss.
Okay. Yeah, I've not seen one done like that.
That's interesting. Yeah,
they counted barks. And yeah, that the cur dog that won, I mean, she was just up there steady hammering them out. And Joker, the way he trees anyway, he kind of trees in bursts. So, you know, he'd be out, 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 and then out, 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 out. So he's not a real regular, you know, steady tree dog. He kind of tends to tree in bursts anyway. But he's still got 63 of them in there in a minute.
That may help you in that other scenario, though. Just say, hey, he's not in cadence yet. Give him a minute.
gotta let him get warmed up.
So WTDA, for those that don't know, is World Tree Dog Association.
Yes.
And most of those, they don't really come west of probably Ohio. You never see them really in Kentucky or Tennessee much, I don't think. It's just mostly all eastern states, isn't it?
Yeah, they're mostly centered out of Ohio, which is their office is I believe it's near Lisbon, Ohio. And it was started by Don and Lily Moats. Don's passed away. I'm not sure when. It was, you know, long before we got involved with any of it, but Lily's still keeping it going. I don't know how big of a registry it is, how many dogs there are, anything like that. It's, you know, definitely not to the scale that UKC is. You know, Lily is, she's a real sweet lady. She's great to deal with, and she does everything old school. She doesn't do computers or anything at all. But she keeps track of all these WTDA dogs, all the hunts, all the wins, all the points for all their titles and everything. And they're nice events to go to. And like I said, they're a little bit different because everybody for the squirrel hunts together. So, you know, you might draw out with a hound, you might draw out with a cur, a feist. You know, it's kind of every class hunts together for those.
Right. Now, back to Joker, is there anything else that you want to accomplish with Joker? I'm sure there is.
I mean, I've got him. I did get him to his squirrel champion title this year, so I'll probably still hunt him some. I don't know if I'll get him to grand squirrel champion or not. I'd like to, but I've got two females I want to focus on too, so I'm probably going to be trying to push them a lot more this year.
Yeah, I saw that the picture you shared that the candid shot Ben Sheets grabbed at Autumn Oaks. And
oh yeah,
Cider, man, she is a pretty dog.
thank you.
She, which I'm new to the white dogs. You probably heard that on the other episode, but
I did. But, yeah, did you say that was everything you didn't want, but what you ended up with?
That's right. But I was actually Joni and Jeff, her husband, had come up from Texas for a club hunt last weekend before last. I'm losing track now, but. Joni's a tricolor fan. Joni and Jeff got, I don't know, a handful and a half, two handfuls of tricolors. So I told her, which she had saw your picture too, and I told her, I said, as soon as I saw that picture of Cider, I knew that I had been converted. Because I was just rolling through Facebook, and I just thought, man, that's a pretty dog.
She's my girl. She's a sweetheart.
Ben must have a good camera too. He does a really good job catching they're just really high quality pictures, whether they're on the tree or even candid, just walking through Autumn Oaks. He has a way to grab the picture at the right time.
Yeah, he's definitely good at what he does.
Well, and so I saw on Facebook, speaking of Cider, staying on Cider now, she won the WTDA St. Jude overall show. So is she going to be the next world champ? Is she the big one you're looking to push this year?
Yeah, I think so. I'm really going to be pushing her. And she's out of our other two feists, Joker and Dixie. So that's something that I'm really proud of is she's one that was born here. So she's that bred and owned. And to me, that's what you're striving for, whether it's, you know, it was the same thing when I had livestock, you know, the bred and owned is what you have to be the most proud of because that's the cross that you've made. That's what you've produced. And she's still young. Like I said, she just turned a year old here in June. So she's, you know, she's really filled out now. She's kind of, you know, grown into herself a little bit more, whereas, you know, the last year she was still kind of in that awkward puppy stage in and out, and yeah, just didn't quite have the muscling or the structure yet that the adult dogs do. But I'm hoping she's going to be pretty competitive this year.
Well, and looking at the picture on your Facebook page, which Joker's kind of turned at a different angle than Cider, but is she leggier? Is she a bigger dog than Joker?
Not really. I think it's just kind of the angle. They're about the same height. She's not quite as muscled up as he is, but there again, you know, she's a lot younger. She hasn't had the woods time on her to build that muscle quite yet. But she's, you know, she's a pretty well naturally muscled dog. So I think put a good squirrel season on her this year, she'll really be looking good.
And how big are they? What size dog do you like?
Ours are all like 22, 23 pounds.
How tall are they?
So I kind of like that mid-range. They're all around 16, 17 inches.
That's perfect to me.
Yeah. So not real little, but not at the top end of the breed standard either.
So, Melissa, as you probably know, that we always try, or I always try my best to get some kind of funny story out of everybody that we talk to.
Okay.
So is there anything that you could share? Because some of the people we talk to, I kindly know them personally, so I can kindly coax a story out of them. That's really not the case with you. So is there any story that you would volunteer?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. That's something I'd probably have to do a little bit more thinking about.
Well, Joni told one on her husband, and I see your husband's name is Kenny, which we haven't really introduced him yet, but feel free to tell one on him. We'll take whatever you got.
he's not even here to defend himself.
That's okay. That's the way we like it.
That's right.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, probably, I don't know. The funniest thing probably is when we got into breeding these dogs. You know, so far we've raised three litters total. We've raised one litter of hounds, and now we're raising our second litter of fights. So that was, you know, a whole learning curve. Like I said, I had livestock and everything, but you know, when I had rabbits, you know, they don't really have a heat cycle like dogs, so you don't have to worry about time and stuff. You know, learning how to do that, and you know, sometimes you kind of have to help them. You know, they can't quite figure it out right away. And Joker had a little bit of that problem last year with that first litter. And I told Kenny, I said, well, you know, you might have to get in there and help him figure out where it needs to go. And he said, I'm not doing that.
Go in there and give him the birds and the bees talk.
Play him some sweet music or something.
Welcome to the fun part of breeding dogs.
But, yeah, and it's just one of those things that, yeah, you got to do what you got to do. And, I mean, it's worked out for us, because that was the cross we got Cider out of. So he finally figured it out, and we got it repeat again this year. So I think there's going to be some nice promising squirrel dogs out of this litter, too.
Repeat it without help, too, I assume. He probably just winked at Dad this time and said, I got this, right?
Well, we did have to laugh, because Kenny wasn't home when I got him tied this time. And I took a picture and sent it to him. And I didn't realize until later on when I had been looking at the picture that it looked like Joker had a big old smile on his face. So.
Well, and in your part of the country, just being mountainous, have you ever had any just odd off game?
I mean, we've got a little bit of everything around here. We've got bears, we've got bobcats, fishers. We're starting to see more porcupines, which I'm not been happy about. Mm-mm. So I with the feist, I haven't really had you know any real strange off game encounters.
Well, I think that wraps up our questions, but want to give you a chance here to, if you want to, which I know you've got a page here for your kennel, but if you want to plug your kennel and tell people where to find you and how to follow you and reach out to you if they're interested in a pup.
Yeah, so our kennel, it's called Meadow Mountain Feist, and you know, we just picked that. It kind of plays off the Mountain Feist breed, but Meadow Mountain is the name of the mountain that we live on. So you know, we just went with the name Meadow Mountain Feist. You know, like I said, we're in Grantsville, Maryland, so we're, you know, a little bit farther from a lot of the main feist action, but we're trying to try to build interest around here locally. And like I said, we do have a litter of 6 week old pups right now, so they'll be ready to go by the time this probably airs. But if anybody's interested, we're on Facebook. Get a hold of us on Facebook, either under my page, Melissa Nash, my husband's Kenny Nash, or we have a page for our Feist kennel.
And so, of those pups, are they all spoken for, or are any of them spoken for?
No, we've still got a few left. So we've only got about 3 out of the 7 spoken for. She had 8. She's raising 7. We lost one the first day, but she's done a real good job with the rest. They've seen a couple dead squirrels. I've showed them some fresh dead squirrels, and been working with them on exposing them to noise and everything. So they'll be ready for somebody to start training them here this winter.
So, well, we appreciate it. Glad you came on. Lots of good stuff. We're going to wrap this one up and jump over to Donald Barnes and talk to him about his back-to-back show winners, and maybe compare some of your notes to his. And maybe when we're done, everybody listening will have a bench champion.
All right. Sounds good. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say, too.
Donald is a good guy. If we can get him to tell his secrets, I lean on him about every time I see him. He does. I will say that about Donald. He is, he's anxious. He's always anxious to help. So looking forward to getting him and to adding y'all together. And like I said, maybe we get the two of you together and we'll have all the answers we need.
But Melissa, next time you're down this way, yell at us. We'd be more than happy to go hunting with you or something like that.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that next time. Yeah, this time we were only there for, I think, 2 or 3 days, and then we hit up Feist Days on our way back.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe next time we'll be able to spend a little bit more time and just pleasure hunt a little bit longer, too.
Well, the first weekend of December, Twin Lakes Coon Club is going to be United Feist Days.
Okay.
Squirrel season will be open, so if you think about wanting to come down and stay a couple of days and hit a hunt, do some hunting too.
All right. Yeah, we hope to hear from you. Hope to see you.
Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, let's jump over to Donald and see what he can teach us.
Yellow.
Hey, Donald.
Hey.
Hey, it's Davin Ramage. Give me 1 second. I'm gonna merge Chad in here.
Okay.
Continuing with episode number 6. The show dogs of the UKC World Bench Shows. We have now jumped from Miss Nash and are going to talk to Mr. Donald Barnes, who has accomplished back-to-back consecutive show wins at the UKC World Shows and has lots of good input as far as I'm concerned. Mr. Barnes, before we jump in too deep to your show dogs and your consecutive success in recent history, just tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and whether you hunt, fish, camp, mow the yard, whatever you do other than hunting dogs. We always like to figure a little something else out about you.
Right. I'm originally from Arkansas. I was born and raised there. I've been an outdoor person ever since I've been big enough to walk. Followed my granddad around a lot. He trapped, hunted. I did a little of everything to make a living, and I grew up with him. He did a lot of fishing, commercial fishing, learned quite a bit from him, but I'm still learning. I don't think you ever stop doing that.
That is true.
Well, Mr. Duff, how long have you been raising and hunting tree and feist?
I started with tree and feist probably 28. I got my first register. I've had dogs all my life. At one time, I was into raising beagles and hunting them. I went to getting into registered elk hounds. I raised them and finally moved over to feist in 08.
Now, what made you decide to go with tree and feist?
Well, what turned me on, I've hunted and went hunting with quite a few people with tree and feist. I didn't want a big dog. I had never been a coon hunter. Didn't like coon hunting. I guess my granddad rooked me on that. So I knew I didn't want a big dog because I was thinking about the expense of feeding it and taking care of it and everything. I just figured a 3 and 5 would be more in my height and range as far as size wise and everything.
Now, do you pleasure hunt and competition hunt your dogs?
Yes, I've originally started pleasure hunting when my dogs got big enough up to hunt and everything. I finally decided, well, you know, when you think you got a good dog a lot of times, but you really don't know till you put it against other dogs that are supposed to be top-notch dogs. And that's what pushed me into competition hunting. I thought I had pretty good dogs, but I didn't really know. Well, I figured out that I didn't have bad dogs at all. You know, you get your feet wet and everything. I remember the first hunt I went on. I went up into Owensburg, Kentucky, which I went out and watched them a little bit and all of that, which I turned Hawk and Robin's dad loose. And when he was younger, he didn't know no short distance. 500 yards is usually where he stopped and started hunting. He got out there and I treat him, and which I didn't know the rules. And these two old boys I was hunting with, they knew the rules. And, of course, we had a 3-minute time slot then in NKC, what it was. And so they said, well, let's just stop here and wait her 3 minutes. Well, he's 500-600 yards out there. And I was thinking to myself, and I said, he will never stay on that tree. No, not that long, 3 minutes and then another 5 minutes walking to him. Well, he didn't, and which I got minus right off the jump. Well, he treed again, same thing, got minus again. And I said, this ain't going to work right here. I finally woke up that I couldn't do what I was doing after they put me in the hole, two squirrels. And I did end up, I think, coming in fourth overall on that hunt and dug myself way out of it. But it was a learning experience, and that's what I tell everybody. Just go learn it. You ain't going to learn it no other way than getting your feet wet and getting into the competition part.
You got to take a lump, learn a hard lesson.
You definitely got to take a lump, and don't get upset. Just enjoy it.
You said that was an NKC competition?
Right. Right. I started out in NKC, and the main reason is at that time it was no UKC hunts in my traveling area. And I kind of drawed an artificial circle on the map, and I said, well, I ain't going to drive over 4 hours to a hunt. So I stayed in a 4-hour circle, basically, from where I lived. I didn't really get into UKC hunts until 2018. They had the World Hunt. Probably the first time I met Chad. I took Robin and Hawk's dad to the World Hunt. First one I've ever been. Didn't know UKC rules. I set up and read the rules, and, you know, you're still fuzzy on the rules trying to remember them all in there. And did real good. I think I come in about fourth in the world that year. Beat out the year before champion dog, and which I lucked out that day. and the competition hunting, if you got a good dog, it's a lot of luck too, I believe. It's not really all. You've got to have that luck when you're competing against other good dogs.
So you met Chad at your first UKC event. And you continued.
Right.
You continued to hunt with him. That's a day you'll never forget, I assume.
Well, that was a good hunt, a learning experience for me too, and everything. And I drawed Chad the second round, and everything.
Who was you hunting, Chad?
I was hunting Junior. That's the year that he won the World Hunt.
Oh yeah, 18. And, yeah, okay.
Donald probably thought that It was my first hunt because I took a minus right off the bat, like he was talking about he did earlier. Yeah, I was playing catch up that whole hunt, but it was a good hunt. It was a fun hunt.
And makes you nervous to call the dog the next time, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. You kind of, when you get in a hole, you got to be careful.
Yeah, I've had my share of minus. You. it just always makes me think, oh, do I want to call it this time?
Right, exactly.
I always do worse once I get a minus. I feel like I'm behind. I got to get out of this hole. So it can turn out good or really bad.
That's what I did on that first hunt. I knew I had to get out of that hole, and the second time I pulled that trigger and went in the hole again, I knew I had to do something then.
So what got you started showing dogs? Did you show in the NKC too?
I showed in the NKC, which Robin and Hawks, Mom and Dad, I don't know if I got them at Champion or Grand Champion. I did Benchel. I wasn't never really big in the bench, and I did more of putting them on the bench thinking, well, if I put them on the bench, I'm giving the club some money to help support the club. And that's where I started out doing my bench shows.
So it wasn't necessarily a desire or a love for the bench as much as you were just doing it to do your part.
No, I was wanting to do my part and support the clubs I was going to and everything. I strongly believe if you don't support the clubs, one of these days we're going to wake up and not have no hunts, and because they've got quite a bit of expense to keep them doors open for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's as good a reason as any, I think. I don't remember if it made the final cut now, but I know that me and Anna Plant talked about that a little bit, you know. And to me, you might as well show if you've already had your hot dog, you know, and you're sitting waiting on the afternoon cast, why not do something else? You know, I think I told her that I don't care if we line the dogs up and race them, you know.
You might
as well do something while you're sitting there waiting on the afternoon cast.
Right. And the biggest thing that I see when I first started, like I said, of doing it for the club, because I didn't see no plain words glory there. You know, the glory was in to winning in the squirrel hunt. You didn't seem to get quite as much recognition in the bench shows, but I can see that's changing now. I think it should, because we push so hard on standards, what that dog's supposed to look like. And that's where we're looking at them at, basically on the bench. Are they looking like a five supposed to look, or are they looking at like some other kind of breed? So I think the bench shows are growing, and they should grow if we're going to really push the standards for a breed and everything.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yes.
Getting back to what Donald was saying, what I always saw about the bench show too is there's been a lot of friendships made watching bench shows. You got all the people sitting around watching the dogs, and they have time to talk and all that at the clubhouse, which I think that's one thing that's starting to go away a little bit is that fellowship and stuff at the clubhouse that, you know, the bench show and the treeing contest used to provide. You know, that little sit around time and watch other dogs and support them, but also, you know, talk to somebody maybe you hadn't talked to before.
Exactly. I'd like for these hunts to be a family oriented more. I'd like to see kids there, and I'd like to see women there. And a lot of people, they're not into tromping through the woods, and it gets them an opportunity to come show their dog and get some glory there.
Getting back on to your show dogs, so it sounds like in talking to you, you have bred the two dogs that we're getting ready to talk about, right?
Right. I own the Mom and Dad. Like I said, I showed them. They showed real good, but I really didn't push it hard. When I got into UKC, I watched one you just interviewed a little while back, and that's Leroy. And I was amazed at what he can do with a dog on the bench. I wished I could do that. I'm not to that point yet, but I've tried to pick up pointers from him. He took my first male dog, and I had both of them there that day. I asked him, did he want to show one of them? I said, you can show whichever one you want to show. He went and played with both of them. He says, I'll take the male. Leroy had never handled that dog till that day, and he won the world with it. I don't know how he did it, but he did it. That's really what impressed me with Leroy. The dog had been bent by me, but not to the point that Leroy gets him to stand.
Well, so when you had the, how many was in that litter?
Remy usually had, every time she had a litter, she had eight. So, one of the pups, I think it went to Mississippi, and it's the dad of Robert.
The two that you kept, Hawk and Robin, was there a reason you kept them? Was there any kind of trade or something you saw in them, or was it the two you were left with?
No, I picked them, and that's something I usually didn't do when I have litters. I usually try to take what's left over, but these two, they was a match. What I mean, their color wise was pretty close. Some people call them saddlebacks, some people call them black and tan. I don't know. I call their dad black and tan, but I wouldn't say they're quite black and tan. They was matched up, and I said, well, I'm going to keep two that is matched up. Wasn't thinking about showing them. I just liked their look. They favor their dad a lot.
Once you had picked your saddleback black and tans, what age do you start working with them on the bench? Do you have any, is there an age you like to start? Do you have any go-to methods or tips or tricks that you're willing to share?
If I was going to tell anybody, whether it's a world dog or a bench dog, before you can do anything, and a lot of people think, really don't know what I'm saying, you've got to read the dog and find out what you can do and you cannot do to get what you want out of them. I look at a young dog kind of like a kid. Some kids, you really got to get stricter. And other ones, you don't have to get that strict on. And that's the same way with young dogs. Some are a little bit hard-headed, basically, than the other ones. So my saying is, learn your dog.
So have you got, I mean, you've built a bench in the garage that you work on. I mean, is there anything you do to help them get their feet right or hold their head up or, you know, flatten their back, any of those things?
Well, if I'm looking at a dog on a bench, I believe the dog should be squared off as far as looks. You've got to be dedicated to benching the dog. My idea of benching dog is every day put it on the bench. First thing, get control of the head. If you get control of the head and get the dog standing there, then you can go to its feet, moving it around. You got to get the dog's attention and get it standing there first.
I think the way, actually, yeah, when we talked to Leroy, I think the way he put it was, everybody tries to control the wrong end.
Right,
I said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Explain that, Leroy.
Well, Mr. Donald, you said a minute ago that, you know, you thought the accolades and the prestige come from the hunt, and yeah, I think for the most part you're right on that, but we need to try to change that. So let me see if I can put all this together, because I hadn't really thought about it till you said something. So you had Doc and Remy that you raised a litter of pups out of,
right?
Okay, so Hawk and Robin won back-to-back UKC World Shows in 2021 and 22, and they are litter mates.
Right.
On top of that, there was a litter mate as well to Hawk and Robin that produced the 2020 world title winner,
right?
Lance Rip and Robber.
Right.
So starting out with Doc and Remy, you produced a whole lot of good-looking dogs there.
Yes, I did. I'm really proud of Doc and Remy for what they've turned out and produced for his dogs. That's one thing. I'm not a dog breeder. I know what I like. I do not breed to sell. I usually breed if I'm wanting something.
Well, since Hawk won it first, tell us a little bit more about Hawk, his titles and all that.
He is NKC. He's super grand. He's grand in the bench. He's champion on the trend contest, grand in UKC, and world champion.
When you won the world hunt, do you remember how many dogs that were competing that day?
I don't know. We had quite a bit of, it was the biggest show that I've ever seen far as shows. I was really impressed at how many people was starting the show, dog. I could not tell you how many was there. It was a lot of dogs there. I couldn't even imagine how many. You might know. You was there and everything.
Yeah. You all beat me. I don't want to talk about that show now. So Hawk has finished out in NKC and UKC in the bench. How many bench shows has he been in? You got a guess?
I would have to guess because I hadn't kept up with it as far as that goes. I couldn't even tell you. Imagine on both of them when they made world, I quit showing them. As a matter of fact, when they in NKC, I quit showing them in the bench on NKC too.
Well, then you have Robin who come back and you handled Robin at the 2022
exact
work show, and I know I was showing against you, and I had Bo set up on the bench, and I kind of looked down at you, and you dropped your hands to your side and took two steps back. I said, well, I'm beat, and sure enough, you got picked. But tell us a little bit more about Robin, about her titles and stuff.
She is just like Hawk. She is finished out in NKC. She's a super grand champion in the squirrel hunt. She's grand in the bench. I did not put her in the trend contest. Usually they show a coon in NKC up the tree, and she did not like coons at all. She wanted to go the other direction on coons, so she wasn't going to make no points on tree and coons as far as that part. She finished out in NKC. She is grand. And she won the world in UKC on the bench, which she's finished out in UKC too.
And I know UKC World Bench Show gets a little bigger every year, so I know it was bigger that year than the year before, and I don't remember how many dogs was competing in it, but Robin had a little bit more competition than Hawk did, I'd say.
I would say so. Even last year up at the World Hunt, they had more competition preceding the ones that Robin and Hawk was in. So it's growing. It's no doubt about it. It's growing. I think if we push the standards, it gets a little bit more prestige when you put them on the bench and they make a big showing right there.
Yeah, I think if every dog on the bench is at the same, is meeting all the same standards, I guess it's like a NASCAR with the restrictor plate. You got to find someplace else to find more speed in theirs. You got to find someplace else to make the dog look a little bit better when they're all competing at the same standard, at the same caliber. You know,
right?
So that's your showmanship gets a little bit, you know, your prep work gets a little bit more. Your, you know, how clean the dog is, the toenails, the, you know, I think all that makes a difference.
Well, I think you're right 100% there. I think when you get to the point that if you got 10 dogs up there and they're all meeting the standard for that breed, when they all meet them standards, that judge is going, like I said, he's going, you can say it's nitpicking or whatever you want to say. He's really going to have, or her's going to have to scratch her head. And most judges then, is going to look at your showmanship. How you got the dog standing? Is it locked down real tight and froze there? And I think the judge will look at that and take it into consideration.
So you've got a couple of world winners that are supered out.
Right.
How old is Hawk?
Hawk's 5 and Robin's 5 too.
Oh, that's right. They're littermates. How old were they by the time you supered them out?
They supered out far as in NJC, I think, about when they were 3-year-old. They might have been a little, they might have been 2.5 and everything. I don't want to back it up and say 2 because I say, wow, 2-year-old dog.
I'm still impressed. I'm impressed at 2.5 and 3, too. I don't think I'll have one supered out of 3. I don't know. Maybe I will.
But you've got to go to hunts to do it. You've got to get out there and go to them because you're not going to win them all. You're going to lose some. That's all part of it. The losing comes along with the winning, too, I guarantee you.
Yeah, I've got the losing part down pat. I'm waiting on the winning part to kick in. You, as a 2-time UKC UKC World Show winner with 2 different dogs, if you had to show them against each other, who wins?
Oh, that would be a tough one there.
Well, I agree. They both won the world, so they got to be real pretty dogs.
Right.
Nobody knows them better than Donald does.
I like Hawk better. I like his built better a little bit. He's muscled up. I like him better than I do Robin. Don't get me wrong, I like Robin. She's a good looking dog, but I like his build a little better.
Do you think it matters? Do you get better results for male versus female? Do you think the gender matters?
I don't know. It seemed like to me, and I might be wrong, a male usually muscles up better than a female, and when you start getting up standards on both, there a judge is going to start looking at that muscled up dog.
Yeah, I didn't care much for that question, Devin.
Male versus female?
You just got Donald to admit he beat me with his second best.
Well, he told us he took all his pointers from Leroy, so... So do you think you'll breed Hawk or Robin?
I've thought about it, yes. The problem I've had, I've known breed Robin this past year, but I couldn't make up my mind what I wanted to breed her to.
And their breeding is Barger, isn't it?
They are 100% Barger. They come from, their mom and dad come from Bill Barger. I bought them when they were weaning age and raised them and everything.
Donald, I'm a little nervous for you. Because you've known Chad and done quite a bit of hunting with Chad. Y'all even hunted together this morning, I hear. It's time for Chad's favorite time of the show.
It's story time, Donald. It's story time.
Uh-oh.
And I'm a little nervous for you because you've known Chad so long that he may have one up his sleeve you're not ready for.
Well, bring it on.
Well, this is just a little short one. It's not much of a story, but then I'll get into. So me and Donald went hunting one day, and of course I didn't realize we was competing on anything, and we get back to the truck and I think we killed the same amount of, I think both killed our limit or both killed 5 or something. We got to laying them out on the tailgate, and Donald said, well, we've tied. What? I didn't know we was competing. He said, yeah, they're all headshots. All of his were headshots and all of mine were headshots. And I guess he was seeing if he outdid me on the headshots. But I guess backing up to what you had mentioned earlier and coon hunting, I remember you talking about that time coon hunting that spoiled you. Would you like to tell everybody else about it?
Well, you know, when you're young, of course, you want to tag along with Daddy and Grandpa, and they were going coon hunting. I'm just throwing a fit to go with them, so they took me. Well, back then, telling my age a little bit, that we was using carbide, or they was using carbide lights. And if you ever been out with a carbide light, you know you ain't got much light there. Well, the first thing, they wouldn't let me carry a light out there. And, of course, this little boy, you know, like most young kids, when it gets dark, they're kind of scared of boogers and everything out there. And I was no different in that. So we took off to the woods. Well, I had to stay behind them, which I didn't like yet. I'd like to have been in between them. But that's where I was at, on the back end with no light. I think they had in their mind they was going to fix me so I wouldn't want to go with them anymore. They got in the briar patches, and I was falling down and falling over logs. Top it all off, they'd draw back a limb, and it hit me on the nose or the ear because I couldn't see them limbs. And, you know, the tears kind of rolled down your eye, down around your nose, because it hurt, and it was cold, that best I can remember that day. That broke me from coon hunting. I said, if this is what coon hunting is, this boy is not going out anymore.
So the mission accomplished.
A mission accomplished. They learned me right there. I didn't want no part of the no coon hunting.
Did they ever invite you again?
Yeah, they invited me, and I didn't go.
Well, wasn't Donald with you on the armadillo hunt, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, that's pretty interesting. We had a lot of laughs at somebody else's expense, I think.
Oh, so, so Robin or Hawk wasn't in on the armadillo?
No, I brought another dog that I raised off of Doc. She will tree anything she comes around, whether it's an armadillo or what, and she will go in the hole and everything. But she's a pretty good little dog.
So I'm going to have to, I wasn't going to, but I'm going to do this. I was gone out west when Davin interviewed Anna, and I listened to that episode, and I'm going, boy, I could have got some good punches in here. Since I was gone, I didn't get to get any punches in, so I think I'm going to do that now.
Let's have it.
So me and Donald and Vance, Anna's husband, are out on this hunt, and first thing, they tear into an armadillo, and it's running around, jumping 3 foot, finally gets in a hole. Get it off that one. No, I'm sorry. First one was in a hole, and they was trying to pull it out.
Yeah.
Well, we get it off that one, and then they chase this one around, and it's running around. I didn't think they could move that fast. It's jumping 3 foot in there. Finally, it gets in a hole, and then it was nothing for a long time. Squirrels weren't moving. We wasn't doing nothing. Then dog got 500 or 600 yards.
Every bit of it.
And you could hear him barking, and Vance's dog was, you'd hear him a couple times, and he'd shut up. Then you'd hear him a couple times, he'd shut up. And I was kindly aggravating Vance, but wasn't at the same time. I said, well, that's another armadillo. He said, how do you know? And I said, well, the only time Robert's barking is when he's coming up for air. So we walk this 500 or 600 yards and get over there. And sure enough, that's exactly what he was doing. So we get them off of that one, and finally squirrels went to moving. We separated. We each killed a couple of squirrels before we got back to the truck. But yeah, that was an interesting evening, and don't know that I want to go back to that spot again.
I definitely don't. I don't mind walking in a few hills if they're not too steep, but them was way too steep there.
Well, Mr. Barnes, I think that probably wraps us.
I think that wraps you up.
I think so.
Well, I hope I've answered your question.
That's what we wanted. Yeah, I think it was, you know, and I think I've probably told the story before. I think I told it when we were talking to Joni, but when I was hanging around watching that first show, I paid attention to Joni and Smokey the most, I guess, which Smokey's a pretty dog. He's easy to pay attention to. And anyway, so I started picking her brain at breakfast the next morning or something, and she kept saying, no, you need to go over there and talk to Mr. Barnes. So when me and Chad had the idea to do these show dogs and get you and Melissa on and just kind of
Yeah.
Let the people hear from a couple show champions and one two-time show champion. It was kind of a no-brainer that you came up just with the success you had. And
well, the main thing I'm trying to do is maybe help somebody else if they're wanting to get into it. And the more we can get involved, the better off I think the whole organization will be and everything. A lot of people are scared about getting the group more involved. I'm not scared of getting more people involved. I think the more people, the better off you are.
I think that's the only way to save it. That's the only way to preserve it, in my opinion.
Exactly. That's one reason I said the women and the young people need to get involved.
Well, I say we can pack it in then. Pack it in and go feed dogs. And
right. It's feeding time here.
That's right.
Wonder you don't hear them. I'm sitting outside right now. Wonder they're not parking. Won't know where I'm at.